What was he wearing? Well, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. No, he's not retarded.
Hello and welcome to another Surviving Grady podcast. My name is Red. His name is Denton, and tonight we are very pleased to have with us a very special guest. Anyone who watches the Red Sox coverage on NESN knows that Jerry and Don are essentially the heart of the broadcast. Heidi Watney, when she was here, was the looks of the broadcast, if you will. But the brains of the outfit, clearly, is Tom Caron, the host of NESN's Red Sox pregame and postgame show, and we are honored to have TC with us as our guest for this podcast. TC, first of all, thank you. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Greetings from Fort Myers. Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. Now, with all due respect to you as a hockey fan, a quote-unquote winter guy, is this the best part of your job covering spring training? It's got to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, no question. Every year I come down here, and I've been coming down here for a long time, and I grew up in Maine, so I get it that, just palm trees and guys throwing baseballs around, it's sort of a sign. And this has been a pretty mellow winter up there. It's not like we're digging out of 10 feet of snow, but there's just something about getting to the point where you're watching baseball that makes you feel like summer's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling. Even from all the way up here, it's nice to, once we see the NESN, the 24-hour essentially live feeds from Florida, it's all part of the process.
It's funny because it was probably 5 years ago that we made the decision to do fewer Grapefruit League games and spend a little more time on these first couple of weeks, the workouts. And I remember, Dan Shaughnessy kind of ripping us in the paper and the idea that we were going to, show guys stretching their groins for 2 hours around the ballpark. But there is something about Saturday morning, when you put it around the house, just sort of flipping it on and having it in the background because it's Florida and it's sun and it's palm trees. And it's, baseball season's still 6 weeks away, but we're there. We're almost there. We almost made it through another winter, and that's a good thing.
Exactly. And I actually I personally like the fact that NESN does so much spring training coverage, because I think everyone just seems kind of looser down there. Don and when the games start, the spring training games, Don and Jerry, if it's even possible, they actually seem giddier when they're doing those games, and just seems like everyone's kind of having, it's like almost like spring training for the station pros as well as the players. So it's kind of nice. There's something pretty cool about it.
It's just, it's very low key. In fact, we were taping some stuff. We do the shows live down here at night during the week from 6 to 7, but we were taping some stuff this afternoon, and this poor tour guide at the new ballpark here, JetBlue Park, kind of took a wrong turn, and all of a sudden this tour group of about 30 people, walked up between me and the camera. All of a sudden there's just, 30, hey, TC! And I'm signing autographs and hugging people and posing for pictures. And, forget about these five guys standing behind the cameras over there getting pissed off because they're waiting for us to do this. But come on by, have a seat. Want your picture on the set? Come on, join me. But that's spring training. That's Florida. It's very hands-on. And I even take it one step further. I tell friends who are Red Sox fans, if you want to come down before the games. Come down these first couple of weeks because guys are just throwing and they're really accessible and they're really low-key. Because even once the Grapefruit League games start, it's kind of that routine of your game and you get into work and you're competing and you're a little more in the zone. Down here they work out for a couple hours. They hang around. You bump into them at Applebee's and Fort Myers, and it's much more accessible down here. It's much more hands-on. It's a great time to be around the team.
Yeah, I've never been, sadly, but I got to get down there at some point. That's on my bucket list. I got to make it to spring training. Denton, you've been down to spring training a couple of times, haven't you?
Yeah, we went 2 years in a row back in, I think, 05 and 06. And it's just like TC said, it's great. It's just so relaxed. And, I got a chance to storm the booth with Remy and probably sold. I think that was responsible for selling the sixth copy of the book.
Exactly. So. after my parents bought theirs and my cousins, right. I think that was about it.
Think about that. That's what? That's like a 15% increase.
Exactly. Exactly. But, well, one thing I do have to ask you, because it's kind of first on my list, is have you met Jenny Dell yet, and is she even half as good looking in person as Heidi Watney was? Heidi Watney was, it was a very dark day for me when they announced that she was leaving. That hurt me more than Tina Cavassio or Hazel May or Chris Lee or any of the people before her, and I'm curious to know if you've actually had a chance to meet Jenny yet and your initial take.
But, yeah, first of all, on Heidi, I mean, I think if you did any sort of online poll over what was the bigger loss, you know, and you get, you like J.D. Drew or Heidi Watney or you know, pick your player, I think, you know, the overwhelming Heidi would be the bigger loss on most fans' list.
I agree.
You know, what happened is, and I, you know, at the risk of sounding modest here, I was the first sideline reporter back when I was doing the Not Your Typical Fan stuff and interviewing,
right,
you know, grandmothers, and you know, while you missed the only home run of the game because I was talking to some guy and his kid, but so it's evolved, you know. I did it, and then Eric Fried did it, and then Tina Cavassio did it, and then Heidi Wine did it, and we all, Eric, Tina, and I, and did it for 2 years each. Frito and I used to joke that it was like being a U.S. congressman. It was a 2-year term, and you couldn't get reelected; you were booted out, and. You know, Heidi managed it. I mean, she was doing 4 seasons. She really, you know, she really cemented herself, you know, as kind of just part of the New England plumber. You know, she was on
right.
TV. So, you know, Jenny Dell is completely different. I have spent some time with her down here, and I've talked to her quite a bit. She's got a great background as a producer at ESPN. She's worked at ESPN and covered a lot of their events, done stuff online, on camera. And she really is a great storyteller and a great reporter. You know, beauty is subjective, and you know, I can only speak as a beautiful face on Nesson that I'm sure she'll do fine. You
Excellent.
Know what I mean? So, if I'm still getting paid to be on TV, Jenny Dell will be in this business for a long, long time. I promise you that.
So I think we can look forward to yet another restraining order, Red. Is that?
Yes, I'm sure. I'll start working on that immediately. Once
they're going to stop putting actual names in and just say Nesson sideline reporter and then pass it along.
Exactly.
Because I think Eric Fried had one out too, right?
Well, like I saw, you know, when Jenny was announced, Nesson.com did this really nice photo gallery of her, as they did with Heidi. And I was trying to think back. I don't remember there being a Tom Karen photo gallery when I got hired for the sideline reporter job. And I'm just assuming that it's because the technology back in 02 was not what it is now. It's a lot harder to put together a gallery, because I'm sure there would have been one otherwise.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think nowadays it's just so much easier, you know, so it's I certainly wouldn't take that personally. I don't want to be one of those people. There's so much looking back on 2011, and a lot of people who look back on last season and the September collapse, if you will, and I'm not one of those people, mind you, but some people seem to think that the Red Sox or certain players owe the fans an apology. They should apologize for the fact that they lost everything, that they took their eyes off the ball or whatnot. What's your take on that? I mean, I look at it this way. George Lucas completely trampled on my childhood by reworking all his Star Wars films and whatnot, and I don't expect him to call me anytime and apologize for that. So I certainly, it's entertainment. I don't expect anyone on the Red Sox to have to apologize for what happened. You just move on, but it seems to be a real sticking point. I'm just curious as to your take on that.
Well, Saturday morning, we're on the air live 10 to noon down here, and I'm working with Nesson. We're going to set up hot coals for each player to walk over as part of the tent.
Excellent.
And I think that'll be sort of symbolic as you walk, as you take the last step on the hot coals, you can then stop talking about 2011.
Excellent.
I don't know. This whole debate about, you know, did somebody apologize enough? How much of an apology? I thought day one down here on Sunday when John Lester got on the bench, and I thought he was great. He was very accountable. You know, Josh Beckett, people said he never said I'm sorry, and he never. I'm not sure that, you know, that's who Josh Beckett is. And, you know, and he said my biggest mistake was I didn't pitch well enough. And John Lester at one point said, if we pitch better, we win, and this isn't an issue. Did things need to get cleaned up in the clubhouse? Absolutely, 100%. But, you know, how crazy were they in 04? And that is sort of what enabled that team to overcome the 3-0 deficit from the Yankees. So,
right.
You know, they're all saying the right things. They're being accountable. Dustin Pedroia was on the show tonight. And, you know, no one had a closer relationship with Terry Francona. And because of what happened to this team, Terry Francona lost his job. And that's a hard thing on any team, and it's a real hard thing on Pedroia. And, you know, my theory is, I really believe, am I ready to give them the World Series? No, but I really think that the biggest thing this team has going for it in 2012 is that, to a man, they don't want to be known by what happened in 2011. They don't want September of 2011 to define their professional career. So you get a lot of guys with something to prove here, and I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, guys playing for contracts, guys playing for their professional reputation, helped the team go a long way. So I think that's one of the things to keep an eye on this year.
So that brings me to a question, TC. Red mentioned a lot of the media and the fans can't move on. I wonder if the players have actually moved on. When you hear comment, you know, like you said, Beckett is Beckett, but even, you know, Adrian Gonzalez trying to downplay it with, you know, guys got to eat, whether it's steak or chicken, and even Tim Wakefield, you know, when he was retiring, made similar comments, trying to downplay, like, yeah, it's not a big deal, you know, people eat, they got to eat, but that to me doesn't sound like a mindset that's moved on. It sounds like they might be dwelling on it a little bit, too.
Well, and, you know, because what happens is, like, and again, tonight, Dustin Pedroia says, I'm not going to, you know, keep, I think Peter Gammons asked him, you know, have guys around you moved on? Have guys in the clubhouse moved on? And he said, you know, I don't know, I'm not asking them about 2011. And I jumped in and said, don't worry, we'll be doing that for the next 2 months.
Right.
And that's kind of the issue here is, do I have, you know, do I want the media to keep asking about 2011? No. But every time we have a different guy on our show here for 2 weeks, I'm going to ask him about 2011. I have to. It's part of the job.
Right.
So you can't completely move on, I guess, you know, until everyone has had their day. Adrian Gonzalez really hasn't done a lot of media interviews yet. You know, they have that bench in back. Even here at the new ballpark, there's a bench in back of the clubhouse. And every day they bring someone else out to sort of do a media briefing. And you know, until each guy sits there and looks in the cameras and answers the questions about 2011, then you can't fully move on. And most of the guys have done that, and I think every day we get a little closer. And then, you know, a week from Saturday, they play Northeastern and Boston College, and then the Twins, and then you start playing games, and then I think it's over. I think the first 10 days, you know, it's going to go from every question's about 2011 to there's a couple of questions about 2011. You know, ESPN will roll in with its bus next week for their day here at Fort Myers. They'll ask a million questions about 2011. By the time they start playing those great Fruit League games, I think that's when they move on.
Right, I think I agree with you
good
on that. One person who had a truly lousy year last year and was under the microscope for most of it was Kyle Crawford. And what do you think we're going to get out of him in 2012? I can't imagine him having two bad seasons in a row. I mean, I'm almost willing to write off 2011 as maybe kind of a quote-unquote adjustment period for him to this market, to playing in Boston where things are probably a little more in your face, let's just say, than he had. Than they were in Tampa Bay, but just on what limited things you may have seen or heard in your time down there the last few days or so, what are your expectations for Kyle Crawford where the season is concerned?
Well, the good thing is, you know, we had him on the show last night. He was on for about 25 minutes, and you know, he was phenomenal, and you know, he's incredibly accountable when talking about what happened last year. You know, and he has come out and said all the things he didn't say last year while it was happening, that, you know, batting seventh or sixth or eighth in the order bothered him, that it absolutely weighed on his mind, and that every time he stepped up to the plate, he thought he had to do something dramatic to get himself back towards the top of the order, that he put pressure on himself to perform up to the contract and up to the market of Boston and up to the expectations of the fans, that he, you know, got so conscious of the green monster and trying to yank things over, you know, that trying to go the opposite field, not yank in his case, but go the opposite field and play that off the wall, that he opened his bat, stance so wide, something we could all see, but that he never realized, you know, until the offseason when he went back to the video. You know, he comes back to camp with the wrist no longer being an issue, you know, when he's done rehabbing it, and admitting that he just got himself all screwed up last year, and he's vowed to try to get back to being the guy he was in Tampa, which is a guy who just went out and played and loved the game and wasn't thinking of himself as a $20 million player.
Another big change this year, obviously, is Bobby Valentine in place of Terry Francona. And I've gone back and forth with my opinion of Bobby. I can't figure him out. In one regard, he looks like just a guy looking for where the next camera is. And then I've been hearing the reports, by all accounts, he's hands-on. He's all over, you know, batting practice, fielding practice. talking to Salto Amaki about how, you know, this pitcher's session went. So how do you think it's working out, and how do you think the atmosphere in the clubhouse is with him versus Tito?
Well, you know, Tito and Bobby both love baseball, and that's probably where the similarity ends.
Yep.
You know, they everything Tito did, Bobby does in pretty much the opposite way. There's you know, I think there's been more meetings in a week of camp here than there were in, you know, 8 years of Terry Francona. You know, Tito wasn't a meetings guy. Tito wasn't a, you know, Tito was a guy, at least at spring training, who watched his players practice and work and, you know, expected them to be accountable for their own professionalism. I think Bobby Valentine believes that too. I think everybody does to an extent. But Bobby Valentine is very much in their face. He's at every field. He's running field to field. You know, day one, playing catch with Daisuke. Daisuke said after he'd never played catch with a manager in his life, you know, so day turning pro in Japan.
Yeah, he said it made him nervous. That was funny.
Yeah, and, you know, and he's standing in. I mean, Bobby's standing in on guys' bullpen sessions like a batter. You know, he's standing there over the plate. And, you know, guys don't really know what to make of it yet. I mean, that's the strange thing is it's just, it's so, you know, hyper energetic that, and Tito was so laid back that it's just such a dramatic change. And little things you probably heard, you know, when you go in the new clubhouse here, there's six big TV monitors. Two of them are on, in the first day, you're watching it for 15 minutes trying to figure out what it is because he's like, you know, not very slick, edited rips of baseball video, and then you realize after a little while it's what they're going to be working on today. You start to realize that this is the seventh straight comebacker I've watched a pitcher field and throw to first base, and it's just he's got that playing in case a player happens to look up there for 5 minutes to see. They've just found from all around the game examples of how you handle a bunt on the third base side, and there's 20 of them in a row. How do you handle, you know, a catcher blocking the plate, and there's 30 of them in a row. And they're just playing nonstop in the clubhouse, along with the, you know, ESPN and whatever movie and, you know, whatever. That's, to me, that is such a small thing, but it just speaks to the attention to detail. You know, his theory is if one pitcher happens to look up and see how this pitcher handled the bunt on the third base side and that was the correct way, maybe that'll be in the back of his mind and it'll help him. Any little thing that might help the team, help a player, Bobby Valentine is thinking about how he can make that happen.
I ask you to put on your Nostradamus cap for a second. Any predictions? And this is, you know, we're just a few days into spring training. But if you were going to make some wild predictions, any predictions for who's going to be the most surprising player on the team this year? And I mean, I should qualify that by saying I mean surprising in a good way, not in a, you know, found drunk and naked in a college dorm way. I mean, anyone instantly, you get in the back of your mind, you know, this guy is going to be a real surprise this year. I mean, obviously Ellsbury last year was a huge surprise, a guy who was so often injured and almost written off in some people's minds, and you had a phenomenal year last year. Anyone that you're looking at right now who you think could be that surprise player this year?
Well, I mean, I won't say Carl Crawford because that's kind of the easy answer. You know, I think you talk about a regression to the means. I mean, Carl Crawford has a long track record of being a much better player than he was last year. So I don't think it would be that big a surprise if he jumps back because I think most people, like you said, are kind of willing to give him a mulligan for year one because, you know, they want to see if he reverts to the guy he was. So I won't say that'll be the biggest surprise. The one guy I've kind of thought coming in, and I've watched a little bit, and I like his attitude and his work ethic so far, is Cody Ross.
Okay.
You know, kind of a late addition, but, you know, he's a guy sort of that, you know, he's not at the end, but he's playing for the end of his career. You know, can he get himself a 2 or 3 year contract by having a good year? And this team, as we know, is so left-handed heavy. You've got a right-handed hitter there who could play a lot of right field. And, you know, has postseason success with the NLCS MVP. So we sort of joke. I mean, I've been pretty good on my picks to click over the last few years. I had Scott Atchison a couple years ago. I was sort of singing his praises, and he made the team. And I was a big David Artsma guy a couple years before that, and he made the team. Although he was great in Seattle, I was a year off on Artsma, but. You know, and Cody Ross, again, not a huge surprise because the guy's been around. I mean, he's not like a rookie with no upside. But I think people are thinking him and Ryan Sweeney are going to be a platoon. And I think, you know, Ryan Sweeney's going to get a lot of time out there. I just think Cody Ross has a real opportunity to grab that spot and play a lot of right field so that they're not so left-handed heavy. And you know, Mike, you know, when you spot Pedroia in the two-hole, Uke in the four, wherever he is, you know, this guy might be lurking there in the seven-hole or something and be able to do some damage down in the bottom of the order. So I like Cody Ross. And on the pitcher side, I'm intrigued by Vicente Padilla to no end. I just, you know, this guy, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he gets the fifth spot in the rotation, but I think he ends up being an important piece of the bullpen. The guy was fearless. I mean, he loves hitting people. You know, when he pitched for Texas, he used to love throwing at guys.
Right.
And we're talking to Salto Lamacchia, who caught him in Texas. And, you know, he says when he's on, he's an intimidating presence on the mound. And, you know, if Aceves is back in the bullpen, you have Padilla and Aceves in there with Melanson and Bailey, and that might be a pretty good bullpen.
One question that's always intrigued me when it comes to the folks who interview the players basically as a good chunk of their jobs. I won't ask you who those players might be that when you have to talk to them you say, oh, Jesus, not again. But who are the players who you genuinely enjoy talking to? When you know you have to interview them and say, oh, I'm going to get some great sound bites here. This is going to be great. Are there certain players who you're actually kind of giddy to talk to? Maybe giddy is a bad word.
Well, Pedroia, yeah, I mean, Pedroia is just great because he is, you know, he's the kind of guy, before, you know, during BP, you'll go sit next to him if he's in the dugout just to talk to him there. Cause he's just, to me, that's the attitude you need to bottle and give to every ball player in the game because
right.
He's such a gamer, and I love his trash talk. And I know, you know, Heidi Watney and others have denied that I have a dark side. But that's I mean, around Nesson, that's kind of who I am, you know. I love Dustin because he's busting chops all the time, but it's, you know, it's great to take it. You can see sometimes it'll wear down some players, but David Ortiz was telling me the other day, you know, it's like, you know, by the end of the season, you're like, oh my God, give it a break. And then 3 weeks into the offseason, you're calling him because you miss his energy so much, you know, you miss the trash talk. And so, yeah, Dustin's great. Yeah, we had Darnell McDonald on tonight, and I really become a D-Mac fan. He's, he's the ultimate story. I mean, it's not Rudy, you know. It's not 15 years in the minors because the guy was a huge draft pick and made a lot of money on a signing bonus and then struggled. And usually guys who made all that money on a signing bonus and struggle pack it in, you know. But last year was his first full year in the majors, and it was in his 14th season of pro baseball. I mean, it's an incredible story. And he doesn't shock me. You know, he loves talking about it. He loves the story. You know, the whole, you know, if you remember, he got DFA'd after his first run. It was in Tampa Bay, and they called him, and they told him after the game, listen, tomorrow we're going to designate you for assignment. You'll be able to probably sign on somewhere else. But he didn't get a flight on that night. He waited until the next afternoon. He had a flight out. He's watching, I don't know why I remember this. He was at the hotel in Tampa watching The Book of Eli on demand. And he got a call because I forget who it was, but somebody came in hurt the next day. And they said, get back over to the ballpark. We need you. And here he is 2 years later. He's still hanging with the team. So I love stories like that. And I love a guy who, you know, is willing to tell his story and doesn't, you know, doesn't shy away from that. You know, for some of the new guys, I think Andrew Bailey's a guy that you're going to see interviewed a lot and that people are going to like. You know, he's a Jersey guy. He's a Connecticut guy. He went to school in the Northeast. He really sort of gets this whole thing. You know, some guys come here who spent their whole life in the South or the West Coast, and they really don't get the intensity of Boston and New York. Andrew Bailey really gets it, and I think he's going to feed off it. If he stays healthy, I think he's having a great year as the closer of this team. You're surviving Grady. You know, I was there for 2 years as the reporter covering Grady Little.
Right.
I moved into the studio when Tito took over. But, you know, I mean, 03, 04, I was on the plane for the Cowboy Up with the team and you know, was around in 04. And, you know, you don't have the characters like that. You know, and I don't know that you're ever going to see a collection of characters like that. But I do think this team under Bobby V is going to show a little more personality than some of the teams we've seen in the last few years, and I think that'll be a good thing.
That's great. You know, you mentioned your quote unquote wild side, and I did tell you earlier that Heidi Watney joined us for a podcast recently, and I asked her. I said, please, I know lurking in Tom Caron. Tell me at least one rain delay you'll find him like strolling the halls with a bottle of whiskey in one hand and a ninja sword in the other. And she just said, no. He's does, you know, he likes hockey. That's all the best they could do in terms of anything crazy. He likes hockey. This disappoints me to no end. I really hope that there was some kind of a
well,
wild Yelling crazy
sentences. Because you're not standing in the parking lot after my Monday night skate during the winter, you know, in the post-game spread, which is out in a bank of snow with a bunch of 30-packs laying on ice. You gotta catch it at the right time. You know, you can't let anybody see that side. You gotta keep that on the down low.
That is good. One thing that I've never seen anyone go from mild-mannered reporter to serial killer than when you grew your Bruins playoff beard. Is there any chance at all we'll be getting any bearded TC back anytime soon? Because that was
David Krejci willing. I mean, you know, if they go deep into the playoffs, we'll rock the beard again.
Excellent.
It's funny, we did it a couple of years ago. They did a beard-a-thon. The Bruins do a beard-a-thon. You could raise money for the Bruins Foundation.
Right.
And a couple of us did it. I went with a goatee. This is probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I was like, yeah, whatever. I won't shave for 2 weeks. They'll lose in the first round. Everything will be fine. Well, they end up going, a month into the playoffs, and all of a sudden they got this thing. And then last year, it's June, and I still got a beard going. And last year I went with a goatee, which kind of scared people. I didn't realize that. whatever. It makes me look badass on TV, so that's fine. That'll whatever it takes.
I thought that the street cred probably enhanced overnight when that thing.
if you watch hockey at all, whatever. I do baseball for a living, but I like hockey. But hockey guys love their facial hair. Every guy in the NHL, if he wasn't in incredible physical condition, if you bumped into him from the facial hair, you'd think he was like working at a used record store. There's like a little thing under his chin and a thing down, And so whatever, we don't like to shave. We like to do creative things with it. What are you going to do?
All right, well, so you're down in Florida. You're there until the season starts, right?
No. I come back. Fort Myers is about 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I get an itching to get back north, so it works up pretty well because I come back up for the Hockey East playoffs. It works up
right.
There's a bean pot, then I come down here, then I get back up in March for the Hockey East playoffs. So I'm here about 2.5 weeks. We do shows every night and on the weekends during the day until the games start, and then when Northeastern and BC come in, Don and Jerry come in, and I get booted, and the big boys are here.
Excellent. And then when the season starts, we'll look forward to seeing you. Any upcoming changes to the pre- or post-game show? Or is it this? I mean, the formula works. It's phenomenal. You guys outside the park before the game starts, and then back in the studio afterwards, and you've added all kinds of great, you've got Gammons there, you've got Rice, you've got Eckersley, you've got yourself. I mean, it's a great, great mix.
And now Matt Stairs. I know you got
that's
all this
right.
by Jenny Dell, but the Matt Stairs, and by the way, Matt Stairs, a man after my own heart, I don't know if you know this story. He, in the winter, is the assistant coach of the Bangor High School hockey team in Maine.
Wow.
We're trying to get him on that Instigator show to talk hockey.
Right.
Before he comes in to talk baseball, so he can just, slap around Gord Kluzak and go at it. It hasn't happened yet. Stairs is going to be great, because it's funny, it's 19 years. You start looking at his numbers, you forget. 95 was my first year in Nesson, and he was part of that team. And he's still, 19 years. He just retired after last year and hit that huge home run in the World Series for the Phillies
right.
a few years back, if you remember. Was it the World Series or the NLCS he had it? I can't remember. He had a big postseason home run that gave them the lead. But, I was talking to him when he came into audition, and, as a pinch hitter, he's like, you're kind of sitting on the bench a lot of these games watching everybody. So it was incredible. You talk about anybody, They just signed Melanson, or traded for Melanson, and he's like, oh, yeah, I saw him, and he's sitting in Houston. He's very good at watching his offseason. So he really knows, he knows everybody in the game. So he'll be a good addition to the group. And it's, we're up to, he has three Hall of Famers, on a local broadcast with Brian Scammons and Eck. So it's sometimes you do pinch yourself sitting with these guys watching baseball. I'll tell you, this is a good closing. I'll tell you I've heard this. This is the Tony Maz line. Tony Maserati on now a radio broadcast guy, not so much a columnist. But it was a couple of years ago, opening day, and it was all four of us on the field on opening day. So it was, I'm hosting, and it's Eckersley, Rice, and Gammons, and he's walking up the other way, and where our studios are in Watertown, and so he's walking by us, and he's tapping the other guys on the head. He walks by, and he goes, Cooperstown, 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 Watertown, sort of. something that has stuck with me ever since that day.
Hold on. Don't you have three Emmys under your belt?
Right. Thank you for noticing. I'm glad they sent along the press release. Hey, listen, Jim Rice said my name during his induction speech in Cooperstown a couple years ago. So that was pretty cool.
That's great. And you're basically the elder statesman. I certainly mean this with all due respect, but you're basically, I mean, with all the years at NASA, you are quote unquote the elder statesman there. I mean, you've got the most. I mean, I imagine they're coming to you first and saying, "Hey, is this Jenny Dell going to work?" And you're saying, you know, giving the thumbs up or the thumbs down, and then she, like, quote unquote, disappears or something if she doesn't get the seal of approval. So,
and that's where the dark side is. I actually have to get rid of the bags with the body parts.
Exactly.
they don't ask me for thumbs up, thumbs down on hiring, but I've been there 16 years, so you do get to be involved a little bit in some of the decision making. Yeah, it's, you know what. Listen, when I started at NASA, they were doing a show called Front Row that I don't know if anybody watched, but now to be part of this, it's been an awesome ride. It's pretty cool to still be doing it, and it never gets boring. The Red Sox are never boring, that much is for sure.
Well, that's phenomenal. And just speaking as a fan who watches the game, you know, part of the whole pregame and stuff. I mean, it used to be a situation where you'd sit and watch the game. Now watching the pregame and the postgame is as enjoyable as anything else. It gets a testament to what you bring to the table and the great productions at NESN and obviously everyone else.
Well, don't forget rain delays, too, because if they're not playing, we're talking.
Exactly.
That's our motto at the office. And last year, we totaled it up at one point. Last year, there were more than 28 hours of rain delay.
Wow.
In the season. So that meant 28 hours we were talking while you looked at a tarp on the field.
That's phenomenal because I remember...
That's good television right there.
Well, you know, I remember the old days in when the games were, God forbid, when they were free on TV 38. During the rain delays, they'd have Bob Montgomery talking about cleats for an hour and a half. I mean, literally, they'd have him sitting there.
What I remember is Ned Martin used to tape these things by the pool in Winter Haven, and they were like 20-minute conversations that weren't necessarily, like, polished, but if it rained there long enough, they'd throw to it. And it'd be like, you know, Ned Martin and Louis Aparicio sitting by the pool in Winter Haven.
Shirtless, of course.
The upcoming season. And this was, like, August, you know what I mean? So what do you expect for the upcoming year, Louis? You know, and they would just,
We don't do that now.
They tell us to get out there and start talking.
That's great. It harkens images of, like, an emergency tape somewhere. When there's a rain delay, someone runs and puts the big clunky tape into the machine. You get Ned Martin there poolside. Yeah. With
2-inch tape, we used to call. Yeah, I'm rambling on here, but, so last year, in the final day of the season, you talk about rain delays. You know, that was the whole thing. The rain came in Baltimore when they were up 3-2. And the last night of the year, obviously. And so the rain delay starts. They throw it back to us in the studio. Now, at that point, the Yankees are beating the Rays 7-0. Yep. And the entire comeback happens during our rain delay.
Right.
So we're sitting there for an hour. There's a Rays score run. You know, we can't show it live because we don't have the rights to it. But we'd, like, 30 seconds after a run, show the run.
Right.
And so Rice and I, you know, Jim and I are just sitting there sort of watching this thing happen. And then just as they tie it up, the Sox come back on the field. You know, then they blow it in the ninth inning, and the Rays game wasn't over yet, so Don throws it to me, you know, and he says, you know, well, let's go back, and the wait is on to see what happens, you know, and we were thrown to a commercial as I'm looking over Jim's shoulder, and Longoria hits it out of the park. You know, and I was about to say, let's go to the break, or we go, I think I was saying, we go to the break, and I said, we go now to the off season because Longoria, and we ended up being on the air for like 2 hours. You know, it was the most bizarre night of television I've ever been involved in.
That was a strange night. I mean, not necessarily a great night to be a Red Sox fan, but it was interesting, all the various subplots that were tied together. It was a very odd end to the season, and I do remember that you guys were sort of, you know, everyone was kind of hanging on what you folks were saying at the station there, so it was
yeah.
It was interesting. It was like being on a deserted island listening to the radio.
Yeah, hopefully we don't get another one like that, but you know what? I mean, in 28 other cities, they think it was the best night, you know, and I'm convinced that's why there's going to be this one-game playoff in the wild card now, is because they want to replicate that night, you know, that with teams getting eliminated on one night. Now you'll start the postseason with that every year, because, you know, it's happening in St. Louis and Atlanta, too. You had four cities involved in it in four games that all mattered on the last night of the year. It's pretty incredible stuff. It sucked if you're a Red Sox fan.
Exactly. I will... Certainly taking up enough of your time here. You're giving us some fantastic insight. It's great that the season's starting again. It's we haven't really had that bad a winter here, but it's nice to know that baseball's right around the corner. TC, thank you for your time. Put in a good word with us, a good word for us with Jenny Dell when you see her again. Actually, you know what? I can use all the good words you got. So put in a good word with us with anyone. You know, your dry cleaner, the guy who cuts your grass, we'll take it. Whatever you got, we'll take the
good
words.
I'll spread the word. I promise.
Excellent.
Guys, thanks. It was fun.